welcome to NACSW's Podcast of the Month. Our podcast program makes available recordings of a wide variety of NACSW presentations and discussions on topics of particular interest to Christians and social work. Our Podcast of the Month program features a new podcast every 30 days for your listening pleasure. We hope you enjoy today's podcast.
Services you offer, because I think that is a part of this presentation, is just looking at the diversity of services to children and families that are offered by congregationally affiliated, denominationally affiliated, or what's now being called faith-based agencies. I want to say, Rick didn't just introduce me. Rick's helped me put this together. He and I have been working together over the last, more than a year now, Rick, in looking at this issue and how the church is responding to the needs or has responded to the needs of children and families for a long, long time. And so we've been working on an article that's in manuscript form now. We've held a couple of summit meetings to pull people together to try to identify some of the issues. You've got the objectives for this 2 hours in front of you. I'm not going to read those. The chances of us covering all those objectives are next to none, but we'll try. And it's going to be really hard for me. I'm a visual person, and I really like feedback when I'm talking. So not to be able to see you, and then if I'm on mute, not to be able to hear you, whether or not you're laughing at my jokes, is just going to be awful. But I will do my best.
I haven't muted yet, but I will now just because there is some background noise.
Okay. All right. So I will ask Rick to put you so that I can hear you frequently so that we can get some feedback. I just got the names of people and where there are groups, but there are a lot more folks on the call. I don't know how to do this, but in the PowerPoint it says, who are our learning resources? The name and a brief description of where you are, I think is important for us to hear. So if we could take, it may take us 15 minutes to get round to everybody that's on the call. But I'd like to know what the affiliation is, and just a sentence of the kinds of services you provide to children and families. Rick, can we take it off of mute and hear from everyone?
You bet.
So let's start with Arizona at the top.
I'm from Arizona Baptist Children's Services, and I mainly do diversion program for high-risk youth.
Okay. Anybody in the B's?
Bridge of Hope. We work with homeless women and children and connecting them with mentoring groups from local churches and working with them to become financially self-sufficient.
Do you have any denominational affiliation or church?
We're interdenominational.
Interdenominational, okay. Mm-hmm. Any other B's? C's. We're Central Baptist Family Services. I am one today. We are a social service agency, and we do provide foster care, juvenile justice programs, child welfare programs, family counseling, and youth-oriented programs. Are you Southern or Northern Baptist?
American Baptist,
yes. Excuse me. Okay. Other C's? D's? E's? F's? G's? H's? I, J, K? L?
Diane, J in the J, Joy Ranch. We are a non-denominational group home for children and adolescents.
Where are you?
We're in Virginia.
Okay. All right, J. K's and L's?
The Lutherans are here from Fort Wayne, Indiana.
All right.
We're a multi-service social ministry organization. We work with teen parents. We work with families for self-sufficiency. We have an adoption program, a counseling program for families and individuals, child care.
Fantastic. M's.
This is Trina Williams from the University of Michigan. I'm a faculty member there, but just prior to starting academic work, I ran a family mentoring program. We had separate services for children and I'm just trying to learn about other faith-based initiatives and how prevalent they are.
Okay, great. Ends? OPs?
Yeah, this is Duane at the Path Rescue Mission down in Florida. We have a small rescue mission expansion. We've been open less than 3 years, but our Women and Children's House, we're doing full case management anywhere when we get them off the streets to self-sufficiency.
Okay. All right. Let's see. We're at Q's and R's, I think. ST?
Paul Treadbar from the Salvation Army Children's Village in St. Petersburg, Florida. We're a residential facility for foster children, taking care of kids in the foster care system.
All right. Anyone else? Anyone that hasn't spoken?
Yeah, I'm with Amazing Grace Adoptions in North Carolina. We do pregnancy counseling and adoption services.
All right, wonderful. And do you have an affiliation?
No, we're non-denominational.
Non-denominational.
Diana, there's one more. Good Parents Ministries and Volunteers. Your organization.
I'm having, you're breaking up. Can you say that again?
We're an interior organization.
Uh-huh.
Mentor-based services, areas of housing, employment counseling, and children's mentors.
Okay, I had trouble hearing you. I'm hoping others did. I think this is a... Is there anybody else?
Hey, United Methodist Children's Home.
Oh, yes, at the youth. I'm sorry.
We provide foster family care services, adoption services, residential group care, emergency housing service, independent living, counseling. I think that's about it.
That's pretty much. And where are you all?
We're in Decatur, Georgia.
Decatur, Georgia. Okay.
Of Atlanta.
All right. Anyone that's been overlooked?
Yeah, Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch.
Uh-huh.
And we provide...
I really think you need me to come as a consultant, by the way.
Well, we really do.
No, I'm... Okay.
Provide residential care as well as community-based services to probably 500 to 600 kids in Montana. That would include school-based, therapeutic foster care, whatever we've got generally.
Lots of stuff. All right. Anyone else that hasn't spoken? I think this litany of services and the breadth of the kinds of support from the variety of different places in the church speaks to the tremendous size of this whole arena for social services and social work that has not really been given much attention at all. And if we do nothing else today, I am excited about the fact that we have this many people with this kind of diversity of services and this kind of diversity of church affiliation, non-denominational all the way to denominational affiliations, that describe what's going on in child welfare in the church. I'm on the page that says a brief history. I've been involved in a large grant that's looking at the faith factor and faith-based initiatives and all that's been going on in public policy over the last few years. I have been appalled in looking at that the whole arena of child welfare services has been virtually ignored. And I think what we're seeing is a catch-22 that if you have been receiving government funds over the last 20, 30, 40 years, then you must not be a faith-based organization. And much of the attention has been going to new grassroots, congregationally based social services, and not really giving much attention to those of you that are in historic agencies and services that have been around a long, long time. I realize some of you are in relatively new organizations as well. When we look at a history of, and I'm not going to do much history, but I do think it's fascinating to look at a history of child welfare and see that it truly is a history of the church's care for children and families, which began during the 18th century through informal care of children in the homes of congregational members. We see that all the way back to the Revolutionary War, where we didn't have agencies, we didn't have institutions when a child was orphaned because parents died from disease or what have you. They were simply taken in to another family. It was only when we had huge national natural disasters or person-caused disasters such as the Civil War, where there were more children than could be cared for in homes, that we began to see the founding of orphanages, often by women in a congregation who would found a house and develop a setting. And some of you are in agencies that go all the way back to those very beginnings of child welfare services. During the 19th century, those were large, and some of you may still be in buildings that date from that period, a very large dormitory-type setting. In the 20th century, we began to see a shift, although the early 20th century was still a focus on care for dependent children, that is, children who didn't have, weren't in trouble or weren't troubling to others, but simply needed care, had been orphaned. And so we saw a combination of the orphanages and then children's homes, and then also the development of first the orphan trains and foster care and all of that movement. But all of that was faith-based, if we want to use today's language, or generated by church folks. I got caught in the shift and began my work in child welfare with a B.A. in sociology, still wet behind the ears. Had worked for 2 years in a state agency in the back when it was Aid for Dependent Children, and then went to work as a social worker. That was my title, certainly not my professional degree, in a congregationally affiliated children's home. In that role, had not yet turned 30, I supervised house parents. I visited families that were scattered all over the rural areas of the state, and I provided, quote, counseling services, end quote, to the children in our care. That was the early 70s, and we were seeing a dramatic shift from care for dependent children to children who were coming to us with more and more significant needs. I'm not sure that children hadn't always had those needs when children have been traumatized by family crisis, but during the 70s we were beginning to see things like drug use and abuse, sexual involvement, and all of the issues that were left over from the 60s and hitting teenagers and younger during that period. And as a consequence, we began to see much more of a move from residential to community-based services. And a lot of our children's homes that were denominationally affiliated began to find themselves with these large campuses, and they weren't quite sure what to do with them. So they began to do some things such as crisis care, and other kinds of, I know several agencies went to providing care for teenage mothers and their children as a transition time. All kinds of creative use of those campuses, but really beginning to move much more toward community-based services. I was fascinated to see, I happen to be a Baptist, and saw the beginning of an overlap and actually competition in my denomination between what was going on in child welfare services and the historic child welfare agencies and those that were doing congregational services through programs such as family ministry that were working in congregations. When the agencies began to move toward more community-based services and then consequently working through congregations, they found themselves working against or with, depending on how it was framed, denominational employees that they had never worked with before. So that was my experience, and I found myself coming at it from both directions, both in family ministry as well as in child welfare. When we look at child welfare services in most of our communities, in fact, most of what is actually done apart from child protective services at the state level, most of the actual care has historically been provided by faith-based organizations. Let me stop there. That was a quick historical overview, and see if anyone has questions or thoughts. Have you all gone to sleep? Do you have your mats out and are laying out on the floor? That's a joke. You have to laugh. Okay, thank you. Is that how you've seen it from your corner of child welfare in relationship to the church or denomination?
Diana?
Mm-hmm.
This is Rose Malinowski from Trinity. And though I'm out of college, I recently started working with my church on a faith-based domestic violence program, and I could see some of the tussles that you're talking about happening. So my perspective is different, being an agency sort of social worker.
Yeah. It's very different, and it means working together with people who've worked with congregations, and it's a whole different kind of work. It's a different kind of work for church leaders, but it's also a very different kind of work for social workers. And that's the piece that I think has been missing in our social work education for doing child welfare that provided through faith-based organizations. We know how to do child welfare services, but we don't know what we weren't prepared in our social work education for how to work in community-based services that are congregationally based or that are providing services that are congregationally supported. I know in the agency where I was in the 70s, we tried to keep congregations supporting us, but actually at an arm's length from us. So our brochures would have these cute little kids on the front, you know, age 7, 8, 9. And we would get boxes of toys, diapers, and quilts, when in fact the population we served were ornery teenagers. But it was hard to get congregations, and it was hard to know how to plug them in to work with the more troubled and troubling adolescents that we found ourselves serving.
Diana, this is Trina. I have a question.
Yeah.
Many congregations, at least the ones that I've been affiliated with in the past, have large amounts, at least of the women, who work as teachers and as social workers and as counselors and as a psychologist, who when they come together with the church, they just kind of have activities. And it doesn't seem to be a real easy way to translate the knowledge and the expertise that's in the congregation to the services that are provided by the congregation.
That's right. I heard somebody in a very different setting make that same comment. They had put the chair of the bank in their town as the head of the finance committee for the church, and he failed miserably. Mm-hmm. And the reason was he knew how to run a bank, but he didn't know how to run a church finance committee. They're very different kinds of skills and different kinds of responsibilities. And so working with, if you're describing volunteers that are working in this, that require very intentional professional services on our part in working with volunteers. One of the things I wanted to do today is simply point out this is a whole arena for social work practice that has been really not given much attention at all. So far as I know, this conference call and some of the conference that we have coming up that's entitled The Church and Its Agencies in Child and Family Services next month are really the first time we've looked at what does it mean when child welfare services are faith-based or denominationally affiliated. By the way, the term faith-based I find a difficult one because it can mean so many different things. And there is a wonderful typology that's been developed that talks about all the way from simply carrying the name that has long since the affiliation has been lost to being infused with the identity of the faith community that's supporting the services. So, but I'll use the term faith-based because that's the language we're using these days. Well, let me move on and talk about the distinctive characteristics of faith-based child and family welfare services. And some of these have come out of our conversations with leaders of faith-based organizations. One of the things we've seen happening, and I'm sure you all have seen happening, is the diversification of funding sources. And more church agencies are relying on government contracts. And consequently, there are multiple allegiances and sources of accountability. So we see organizations that may in fact have 80 or 90% of their budget coming from a government source, and yet they're called Baptist something or other. And they are still making reports at the annual denominational convention, and that identity is very important to them. But talking about what we do and relating what we do to both of those is very different. It's very different to respond to a government contract and be evidence-based there, and to describe what we do as mission-driven for the church. I talk about social workers, particularly in faith-based child welfare organizations, have to be bilingual. We have to be able to speak the language of the profession, the language of social work practice, and the language of government contracts, but we also have to be able to speak the language of Zion. I wish every one of my social work students had to take a course in preaching. I think we have to be able to really not make it up, but really be centered in who we are as people of faith, leading people of faith, serving the least of these. Let me stop and see if there's a reaction. Anybody?
Amen?
Yes?
I just said amen.
Amen? Oh, okay. I'll take that.
I think that's an issue that our agency is definitely struggling with right now, is just the constraints and regulations that the state, as a government, as a private agency, figuring out how to square that with our faith and our beliefs, and yet trying to meet their regulations at the same time.
Yeah, that's right. Now, I think that's freed up some with all the faith-based language going around. There is more leeway. There's more leeway, for example, in hiring practices. And I'm very conservative on this point. I think agencies need to be able to hire people who can relate to the congregations or faith community that supports them. I was just reviewing a book early this morning that is Lutheran, for those of you in the Lutherans, and I thought, my goodness, and I was up speaking, by the way, not too long ago at Luther Seminary, and I was effective there because I was so awed. I didn't realize how different we are in our language and how we talk about our faith, but we are. I could learn to be Lutheran in my language and in my conversations in a Lutheran agency working with Lutheran congregations, but I'd have to be intentional about it. I work pretty darn well with Baptists because I know their language and I know how to make that connection, and I think that's important. Several years ago, I did a little book called "Precious in His Guide: Precious in His Sight: A Guide to Child Advocacy for the Church." It was published by Women's Missionary Union, which is the Baptist women's organization for us. It was flat out, with permission, stolen content from the Children's Defense Fund and baptized. I took their work, some of their stuff, and put it in language that would communicate to the passion of Baptist women to make a difference for children in their communities. I think that's what we have to be about.
Could you repeat the name of that booklet?
Sure, and I'm not advocating that book necessarily, but the name of it is Precious in His Sight, A Guide to Advocacy for the Church, or something like that. It's published by New Hope Press, which is the Women's Missionary Union Press in Birmingham. I don't even know if it's still in print or not. It's been 5 or 6 years ago. But they made it their study course book for the year. Can you believe that? For the missions organizations, and all the women's organizations study that. See, that's the kind of thing I get really excited about, that because we can dig in and get our work as social workers. I got that work into congregations that will never have me come as a consultant or have me preach in their pulpit, but they are digging into the needs of children in their communities. Well, I got off of where I was on that first point of multiple funding sources, but the second point is a disconnect in some agencies, and I've experienced this, perhaps you haven't. One of the ways that a lot of agencies have dealt with the fact that they're faith-based, but they're also needing to meet professional standards, whether they're Child Welfare League standards or their licensure standards by the state for the kinds of services they provide, is that they have a professional social work staff, but the CEO of the organization is a clergy person who may never have done anything in child welfare. And so you have this major disconnect between the person in the driver's seat of the organization and the professional staff. And both are problematic. I mean, I think a CEO needs to have a heart for and an understanding and appreciation for child welfare and services to children and families. But I also think the social work staff needs to have a commitment to and an ability to articulate and be passionate about the mission and faith-based orientation of the organization. We're seeing some of that addressed. We're trying to do some of that here at Baylor through our students that are doing both a Master of Divinity and a Master of Social Work degree. We're not the only ones. Many of you are in programs or have been in MSW programs that had a dual degree kind of program. But I think we're going to see more and more of trying to pull those together. And I think that third point I've already said, the lack of understanding by professional social work staff of the significance of the religious setting. When I was going through my MSW program, the MSW program that I attended was allergic to religion. And the fact that I was a pastor's wife was a tick against me. It was considered problematic, and there was no place for faith or religion, certainly was considered a liability, not an asset. Well, now we've come around as a profession to recognizing faith and spirituality are a part of the human experience and need to be a part of what we teach. One of the things, though, that hasn't happened that I think we'll see over the next 10 years is that the organizational context is also significant. In other words, We recognize as social workers that spirituality and religion are resources for people who are dealing with crisis in their lives. But we still haven't paid much attention to what does it mean that I work with the Immaculate Conception Pregnancy, Troubled Pregnancy Agency, or the Arizona Baptist Children's Home, or Yellowstone Youth Camp, I can't remember the name of your agency, or wherever you are. What difference does it make? How does that shape, and how ought that to shape what we do? Anybody?
I just have a quick technical question about the PowerPoint presentation. I was trying to print out the screens, and it's not, the pages are printing out blank. So I wasn't sure if there was something special I needed to do.
It might be a technical answer. When you open up something in an Adobe format, rather than printing from the very top of your screen, there's an icon at the middle of the screen, and that usually will deal with that issue. If that doesn't do it, why don't you call me after the conference, and I'll be glad to see if we can figure out a way to get that printed out for you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Yeah.
Mackenzie from Trinity. Of this dichotomy you're presenting about how your faith, often in MSW programs or BSW programs, can be combined with your social work practice. I think that was right on, saying that it's difficult when you're in your education that it's separated and you have to just learn how to keep it separate, but then when you're in a faith-based setting, it seems to come back together somehow.
And it's very difficult to, I mean, there are all kinds of ethical issues, and struggles, and my fear is what students learn to do is hide their faith in their social work program. And so they really don't wrestle with what it means to be a person of faith, in the practice. And nor do have agencies had the benefit of wrestling with the ethical issues. Anybody else before we go on?
I think agencies have to be careful to preserve their distinctiveness. I think that goes back to hiring practices in some ways. It goes back to what you were talking about, dealing with the government and meeting their standards.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a difficult balance.
It is a difficult, and it is a very important one, to be very clear about who we are and what we do and what we don't do. Let me talk about some of the distinctives of faith-based organizations. First of all, we really do have a history of working with the most vulnerable children and families. Some of your agencies are the last step, the last opportunity for children who have washed out of other programs. And we've seen, not all, but some faith-based organizations have really seen that as their mission. One of the organizations that I've had the privilege to work with, and we'll talk about in a minute, was Maryhurst, which is a Catholic agency in Louisville, Kentucky. And that has always been their goal, is to work with young women who are most troubled. Other distinctions that state organizations don't have, and that is we have ready access to a wide range of resources because of our connections to congregations and communities of faith. Unfortunately, we haven't always taken advantage of that. Or more to the point, we've tried to take advantage of that, and my Kentucky roots are going to show here, but we've strip-mined congregations of their resources to come and help us with our children without really thinking about how what we do can help congregations accomplish their mission. Now, that's a subtle difference, but I think it's an important one. We don't just walk in on a Wednesday night church supper and see if we can get some visiting home volunteers from a congregation without thinking about what the impact involvement with our agency might have on that congregation. And that's where I think our role as social workers who understand not just faith and spirituality as characteristics of people, but also of organizations come into play. And we need to see the congregations that support us as organizations, and our job is not just to work for and the agency where we are, but also helping the congregations that support us accomplish their mission, whatever that mission is. And if we can find ways that we do that together, then praise be. I think that's a delicate and professional practice that requires a lot of skill and knowledge and work with congregations. Does that make sense?
Amen.
Okay, all right. all right, I'll keep going. Anybody object so far or wonder what in the world I'm talking about?
Well, this is Trina Williams speaking. When I was working with the congregation in Nashville, rather than me trying to figure out what the congregation's need was, what helped a lot was that the two ministers of the congregation I worked with, they started to find ways to bring some of the things we were doing into their sermons and into their larger perspective. And not only did that bring volunteers, but it did the articulation for me as opposed to me trying to figure out what would fit into those two congregations. The ministers actually bought in, I guess, and believed in the vision, and they started to do some of that work, and it not only did it lead to synergies, but the volunteers who came through knew why they were doing it and how it fit into their faith, and it made everything work a lot more smoothly.
That's ideal. That's absolutely ideal, and that's the kind of thing I think that needs to happen, that kind of collaboration and working together. Clearly, you weren't just there to get some volunteers to come over and help you do what you needed to do.
Right.
But those volunteers were growing in faith as a consequence of their involvement with you. At least they would be if their ministers are coming alongside them and helping them articulate the relationship between what they're doing and who they are as Christians. The next point is a commitment to providing services strengthened and reinforced by religious beliefs and values. We really do have staying power because we are not dependent on gratitude or on changed lives for the work we do. Sometimes we get that, and it is wonderful. But the motivation for our service, the motivation for our agency's service, comes from our calling to care for the least of these, not to make sure that people turn out like we think they should. And I think that has to be clearly articulated. And it gives us freedom in faith-based organizations. It gives us freedom from evidence-based practice. Not that I don't think evidence-based practice is important, but we can try new things. We can take risks and risk to fail in new programs, in new services, in new ways of approaching problems. Because we are not solely dependent on outcomes to justify our existence. Anybody else want to say anything at this point before I plow on?
I think that what you're saying is really our hope in the work that we're doing, because our hope is that God is working through us and that He will be changing lives, but we entrust the outcomes to Him in a sense.
It's not the outcomes are not our responsibility. The faithfulness is. Now, that's who we are as a faith-based organization. That's not who we are as social workers. I mean, that we have to hold both of those things, one on the left hand and one on the right hand. Obviously, when we relate, we're getting government funds or foundation funds or whatever else, we have to answer for what we're doing. And as social workers, we have to practice ethically and with the most up-to-date knowledge base and within the code of ethics that we have. But we do have organizational freedom to be on the cutting edge. I'd like to think that more of our organizations were on the cutting edge. I'm not so sure they always are. We are committed to nurturing the spiritual growth and development and religious expression of children, and that's a piece that's been unique in faith-based organizations and been important to who we are. And then finally, we promote society's most enduring values, and those are things that make us distinctive. I've put there in the PowerPoint, and I'm not going to go over them, an example of the values of Sister Mary Euphrasia. This is the Catholic agency where I did some work when I lived in Kentucky that articulate. Now, I've got several agencies here that I'm describing something about them. I'm not holding them up as a model necessarily, but as an example of what this might look like. Clearly, this value statement is infused with who they are as a religious organization. This is not the kind of value statement that you would see in the Kentucky State home for whatever. But it is the framework under which they do everything they do. I've listed under Model 1 some of the faith-based child and family welfare programs and I've got several models here. And actually, I'm not going to take credit for this. Rick and I worked on this together. But just trying to do a listing of all of the kinds of things that we see agencies doing. And in this category are direct services, things that are provided directly by the agency to families and children.
Thank you for joining us today for NECSW's Podcast of the Month featured selection. We hope you found today's session useful and that it will support your efforts to ethically integrate Christian faith and social work practice. We also hope that you will consider participating in additional NECSW activities and events, such as NECSW's upcoming Convention 2011 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, from October 20th to 23rd, our quarterly audio conference workshops that we offer at no cost to NECSW members, and access to dozens of archived podcasts from the member section of our website. Also, we invite you to join NECSW's Facebook group or our Facebook fan page. For additional information about these and other NECSW benefits and services, you can go to our website at www.nacsw.org. Thanks again for listening into our podcast session today.